Today on The Grave Talks, Investigating the Dead, a conversation with Joe Campbell. From Franklin Castle to Waverly Hills to countless private residents, Joe Campbell has been on the hunt for spirits for nearly a decade. How does one jump into the world of paranormal investigation? What do you do when you accidentally find yourself leaving an investigation with more souls than you walked in with? Today, we have an in-depth conversation with Joe about his role in paranormal investigations and how to help those in need.
I guess I was in my 20s, maybe 30s. I lived in an apartment by myself, and this literally happened. I moved into an apartment, and the man that lived in front of me died of a drug overdose, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the day I was moving in. So when I was moving in, I couldn't move in because the ambulance, the cops, everything, they were dragging his body out of the apartment at the time. So I couldn't move in. So once they were gone, I moved in, and not too long afterwards, you could hear footsteps in the apartment, like dragging on the carpet. I had my bathroom door open on its own. Just random strange things. And then I started watching the Ghost Hunters series. And that also actually got me interested in doing what I'm doing now. And of course, you know, you're like, okay, is this real? Is this, you know, are these guys faking it? Or are they, you know, are they legit?
Mm-hmm.
So I met my wife, which she is the biggest part of this whole situation. And I was like, man, I want to do that. I want to try that. I want to see if I can get anything or, you know, meet people, go to historical places, mansions. I just wanted to see the architecture of the places.
Sure.
So I believe it was on my birthday. She bought me the little kit you get off of eBay. And she's like, here, go do it. Follow your passion. And I haven't looked back 6 years later.
So you get this kit off of eBay and you have an interest in this. Did you have any idea what you were doing with the kit that you got off of eBay? Or is this just all like foreign tools to you? Like, let's see what happens. What sort of knowledge did you have when you began this journey?
Well, of course, when you start out, you know, there's not a like, I don't know. I'm sure there's probably like training books or whatnot. Or videos you could watch how to be a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator or whatever. But I didn't have that. So basically what I did, we were at home and she's like, listen, the lady across the street, her brother is a paranormal investigator. Would you like to go on a hunt with them? Mm-hmm. I said, absolutely. So we went to a location in Galleon, Ohio, called the Gill House. And so we went one night, and the first time I ever got my first EVP, I was just stoked. I mean, I was like, oh my God, that is so great. And the EVP, the only thing it said was, hey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but still, you know, I got something that was, you know, credible, and it was great. And the K2 meters, of course, you have to learn that the phones will make it go off, or if you're by some sort of outlet or whatever, you have to learn all that stuff. So I did all that. I had common knowledge, like the thermometer. I had a spirit box in there also. I had to learn how to do that because basically when you just start with the spirit box, all you hear is a bunch of grumble and you're like, huh? But I had to learn also the spirit box is used for, like, you know, in certain spots, you know, if the energy is high, you can really get good stuff off the spirit box.
Sure.
So yeah, that's how it was. And it was, I've had great experiences with the equipment, but the best equipment I think I have is digital voice recorders.
Sure. And I hear that from a lot of people. Prior to investigating and really getting in there in your lifetime, and you know, obviously you had the passion, you had someone in your life that saw you had the passion. What was there many experiences through childhood or anything like that, other than the interest that really kind of drove you in that direction?
Right. Well, when you're just like, it's like, I talked to my psychic medium. She's pretty awesome. Me and her talk every once in a while. And it's like we live in two worlds. Okay, it's like you got the normal world where you really don't know what's going on. And then you got this other world where basically you can hear, see, whatever in these worlds. And so as a child, no. I didn't really have anything that it could... Things have happened, yes, but I didn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
So once I started doing this, now my mind is open to a different kind of world.
Sure.
So it was pretty awesome.
What was your belief system, you know, prior to going into it? Were you accepting of ghosts, paranormal, the possibility that these things are out there? Were you, I need to see it to believe it? Where were you at mentally?
Yeah, when you first start, you're thinking, okay, yeah, they're ghosts. Then you start talking to other people. You start listening to Hans Holzer, different people like that. And you start listening to what they have to say. And you're kind of like, okay, is it a different dimension?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's pretty strange when you could go outside. There's absolutely nothing around and it's quiet out and you still get, you can get EVPs, have your equipment go off like in the middle of the grass somewhere. I mean, mm-hmm. It's pretty strange.
Sure. So when you began investigating, you got your first EVP, you know, it's one thing to believe that these things are out there, but you know, you may not have, actually had them in the past, but when it comes to you and there it is, was that kind of a turning point for you? Was it kind of a moment of, okay, this is very real for me now because it's happening to me. It's not me just seeing it from other people or things of that nature.
Right. Yeah. So like I always tell people, it's, if I could do this for a living, I'd do it.
Sure.
I mean, I enjoy it very much. I have traveled for the past 5-6 years. I haven't really stopped. I mean, this year alone, I've been the busiest.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the pandemic going on and whatnot, and we're getting, you know, I'm getting messages. Hey, I need you to come out. I think I got something moving in my house.
It's interesting, yeah, when we're talking about the pandemic, because there's so many people obviously at home paying attention to things in their own homes more than they may otherwise be. In your opinion, in 2020, since this has all began, do you think there's been a spike in activity, or do you think there's just happens to be, you know, because, you know, there's more people in the forest able to see the trees fall, that we're seeing more trees fall essentially?
Yeah, I think it's always been there, but there's never been that spike. It's because more people are home, there's more energy in the house. like the children, the mothers, the fathers, mm-hmm. the grandfathers. I mean, you have all that energy in the house all together, just staying in one spot.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, it also leads to fear too.
Yeah.
Because the
anxiety that individuals are feeling through all of this, I'm sure does not help whatsoever. And then you also have certainly a dramatic increase in substance abuses and things of that nature and just negative choices being made because of the stress and anxiety that so many people are under. Well, let's talk about some of your investigations and let's go beyond that first EVP. What for you, as you dug into it and you said, I really want to do this, I want to start traveling around, what were some of the initial locations that you had essentially on your ghost bucket list that you wanted to get to and then did, in fact, were able to go through the doors of those locations?
Yeah, the only place I really knew about was either Waverly Hills or Prospect Place Mansion.
Okay.
And so my first investigation was at the Gill House. I took my team with me. I got my team together.
Okay.
But I wanted to go to... I want to go back to the Gill House. I wanted to go to Prospect Place Mansion. I wanted to try to find every location possible, at least around me. You know what I mean? So basically, I just hit the road, and I looked up places that you can investigate, and so I did, and. Basically, you know, Franklin Castle, I investigated Franklin Castle. That was after Nick and Katrina investigated it when they were there for 3 days. They got, after 2 years or 3 years or something, they got a hold of us and wanted us to investigate it because they were not letting any investigators come into that house. And that was probably the first time I walked in the door and I'm like, oh my God.
Why did they contact you to do an investigation when no one else was being allowed in?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, it could be like we were asking for an investigation and they said, no, we're not doing investigations. And then they changed their mind.
Uh-huh.
I'm not really sure how that worked out because my wife talked to them about it.
Okay.
So we went out there and Bill, his last name escapes me. He took us out to dinner. Really nice guy. And we went back and he went to his room or wherever because he was a caretaker. He's a caretaker out there.
Yeah.
And, he went to his room and we investigated, I believe, for 10 hours.
Give us a little background on the Franklin Castle. What is the story on it for those who don't know?
Okay. Mr. Hans Tiedemann, he owned it. He had it built and he owned it and had his children and his wife living there. Claims were that he had killed his children, put them in the walls, so forth, like that. Like he was like a murderer, he was a tyrant, but that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. He was like he's from Germany. Him and his wife is from Germany. So they came to Cleveland, Ohio and built Franklin Castle, and they lived there until they died.
Okay. So the stories of murder and such that kind of surround the building, legitimate or really just, you know, lore that ends up making it sound much spookier than it actually is?
I mean, don't get me wrong, Franklin Castle, what I heard, it's the whole neighborhood, it's just not Franklin Castle.
Mm-hmm.
But inside there, someone actually went in there and planted bones into the wall probably back in the 70s. And so when they were either remodeling or whatever, they found bones in the wall. So they're saying that Hans Tiedemann, was killing people and and put the bones in a wall, bodies in a wall. Really strange. But Bill will tell you that that didn't happen.
Sure.
And it was really strange. And the place is really strange itself. And it's you got a lot of activity in Franklin Castle. And I had one investigator. He got followed home by something. I don't know what it was. Again, he got followed home, and another investigator that was messing with her, and she said, she said, I'll never do this again. She quit. And so you can literally see shadows going across the wall. I mean, just like you see something, a shadow standing there. If you're like sitting in the living room, all of a sudden you just see going by or. Yeah.
When you set out to do an investigation, and I want to talk more about something following one of the investigators home. When you set out, your group sets out to do an investigation, what is your goal exactly? Like, what is it to get evidence? Is it to prove to yourself that there's something here? Ultimately, you know, what are you setting out to do?
Yeah. Like during home investigations, we're basically there to help the customer out. If there's something going, we try to do the research on the land also, and try to go back as far as we can with the house also. So we go in there, we try to help them out. So when we help them out, we basically set up cameras and voice recorders around the house, which I got much better voice recorders since the first time I started investigating. So now I use Olympus recorders, which are just amazing recorders. And we go in there and we try every style we can to investigate. Maybe role play. We try to use music, which sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's not. But as for public, like, you know, we go to these places like Franklin Castle, the Gill House, the Prospect Place Mansion. We're there for evidence. That's what we want. We try to not to contaminate our evidence. And I basically bring it back to my home, and I listen to all this stuff, and I watch all this stuff. And see what I can get. It's mostly just like mostly EVPs.
Sure. And there's a giant difference between investigating a public location like a Franklin Castle or something of that nature and someone contacting you and saying, hey, I have something going on in my home. What do I do? What? How do I handle it? Let's go down that road a little bit further, because, you know, we can talk about public locations a lot, and a lot of people have been to the same places, and, you know, they're active. They're clearly active. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a lot of people going to them. And I'm not asking for you to talk about names or locations or anything like that, but we can certainly talk about cases with those things omitted and are able to discuss things that are found and occurrences that occur within private residences when you get a call that says, hey, what should I do? Number one, let's just kind of go through the process of how you work through that. Now that, you know, this is a thing that people do, that there's a comfort level. You know, there actually is a phone number to call, you know, who you're going to call there. You know, well, you look up a paranormal investigator in your area. It's not hard to find someone now. And you get the call. What sort of screening process do you do initially to determine whether or not this is a location that you want to go into and believe that you have something that you can contribute to help the individuals with?
Yeah. So, like social media is very helpful. I mean, as for investigators like us, we have our own page. They can email us and or message us on Facebook, which is pretty great. And so when you get that, when you get that call, you get their address. And so you go out to the house, and basically what you want to do is see what you're getting into.
Do you, did you go to anyone who just contacts you, or do you have a conversation prior to, or do you just go out there immediately?
Absolutely. You always want to talk to somebody before.
Sure.
You go out to, you know, go out to a location. They will call me and I'll talk to them to see what, you know, what's going on. I talk to them. I want to see if they're, I guess they're for real. You know, they're not a bunch of kids playing around, and, you know.
Sure.
But mostly the places that I have been to, I haven't had anybody faking anything. I haven't had a, I mean, they're legitimately scared.
I mean, other than kids playing around, I think people, adults who are calling, they're calling for a reason. Whether it is a haunting or a bad water heater, they may not know the difference or what is going on in their home. Then they legitimately are trying to exhaust options of finding answers to what is going on in their home. So when you do have that, and you get out there, you've determined, you know, this person legitimately thinks there's something going on. Let's at least get out there and take a look. This isn't a kid playing a prank. What are some of the first things you do when you get to a home to investigate it, to kind of narrow down what it is going on, kind of, you know, curb the odds of, is this something that we should investigate further, or is this something we can have a logical explanation for?
Yeah, what we literally do is we'll go to the house and we will record over a voice recorder. We'll turn it on and she will walk us through the house, or they will walk us through the house. It's mostly been females that have called us. Not a lot of males. It's like maybe some sort of ego kind of thing, but we will literally walk through the house and she's like, well, you know, well, this happened here, I'm hearing this. And I bring that recorder back home and I listen to the recording when we went initially for the meeting.
It's like a tour, and you get like a walkthrough and you're rolling tape on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it walk through and tells us the claims. We set up a date. I bring my team in and we investigate. But it like a case out here in Newark, Ohio, we had lady got a hold of us and said, hey, I got something beating me up. I need you, you know, to come out here. I got some stuff going on. So we went out there, and of course, I turned my recorder on. I let it sit on the table. It was a small house. And so she would show me pictures of her legs, her stomach, her back, which had bruises like somebody beat her up. And I'm like, wow, it's like, that's crazy. And I looked in her bedroom. I said, well, I guess you don't sleep in your bedroom, because she had clothes piled almost to the ceiling on her bed. And mm-hmm. She's like, no, I don't sleep in that bed. I'm like, okay. So I bring home the recorder and you can literally hear like a nasty voice and back going, they're coming. Yes, they are. I was like, oh my God. So we set up a date and we went in there, and I didn't know what was in there at the time. And I dropped the recorder in the kitchen and I tagged it and I left the kitchen. And I sent you the video of a, I don't know what it was. It was a voice that was trying to say something. It was very, it almost sounded like a demonic voice.
Uh-huh.
People are saying it was a Latin language.
Okay.
And I got it on three different recorders in the bathroom, in the bedroom and the kitchen. And it was the most terrifying voice I ever heard in my life, which I wasn't worried about us. I was worried about the person that lived there. Because she, that's where she's getting all this stuff. Well, during the investigation, we set up our cameras and I'm in the kitchen and my obelisk goes off. She believed that her mother was still there, but her mother did not die in that house. Her mother died in the kitchen.
Okay.
Or sorry, in the hospital. I'm sorry. So I was looking at those obelisks and my obelisk, you don't wave around an obelisk because it'll be like random words just come out of nowhere. You just let it sit. So all of a sudden start saying like quilting and haze. There was a fire down the street and the sky was just filled with smoke and very hazy out. And I'm like, wow. So I asked them, I said, so what did your mother do for like a hobby or something? She's like, well, she quilted. I'm like, wow, that's pretty significant. So I'm like, well, maybe she is here. And then through the night, all of a sudden, it's just like, it just felt like dread in the whole room, in the whole house. We turned the spirit box on, and I had an investigator run it, and all of a sudden, it started saying nasty words, like talking about child molestation and different, you could tell the demeanor in that man just got really mad. Like it was, you could just see it.
Yeah.
It just got really thick and heavy in there. At that time, I had a recorder in her bedroom. Over the recorder, the only recording I got out of that bedroom, you could hear the same voice I got. It said, I hate you. I was like, oh my God. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this house. So in the kitchen, you hear, get out. Of course, you know, as paranormal investigators, they do not want us. They know who we are when we come into this house.
Mm-hmm.
I literally believe that. When you go into it, and when you go into a place, they tell you to get out. They basically want their victims for themselves. They okay. don't want they don't want to leave. They don't want to. They don't even want to mess with you.
Sure.
So I was like listening, and we had like a group thing at the house, and we were listening to this, and I was like, we got to help this woman out. So had an investigator call a demonologist, and the demonologist said, it's like, oh my God, this is not human. You need to go back in that house and you need to draw it back out again. That's what we did for 5 hours, and we got absolutely nothing.
Why was the demonologist suggesting you go back in and draw it back out? Was there other individuals there, or was he just suggesting you and your group go and do that?
Yeah, it was like four of us. We went in there again, and he wanted us to know, to see if it was ever human.
Okay.
Like, do you know what the color of the sky is?
I see.
Do you know what color grasses, or do you know the feel of grass, or just random questions like you and I would know?
If you were to ask something that was not human, a demon, a question like that, does it have to be honest with you?
Of course not.
So what makes a question like that effective then? If you know you're asking a question because you're trying to determine you know, its origin, essentially. That's what I'm gathering when you would ask a question like that. It's well, was this a human that's just, you know, a cantankerous asshole, you know, or is it, you know, or is it something that is dark and demonic? I mean, what when you ask a question like that, what does grass feel like? And if it does have the ability to lie to you and say, here's what it feels like, how does that tell you one way or the other?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I really don't know. I mean, but I know that during that investigation, it tried to disguise itself twice.
Okay.
It just tried to disguise itself as her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it tried to disguise itself as a little child. Because later on that night, I got an EVP that said, Mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God. It's trying to disguise itself. Was it demonic? Not really sure. I mean, but we went back the second time, she had her boxes all piled up and she was ready to move.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Joe Campbell about investigating the dead. In part two of our conversation, what makes Joe feel qualified to deal with a haunting when things feel very dark and threatening? Does Joe ever feel that he's in danger when investigating a property? What are some of the most effective ways to bring a spirit out while conducting an investigation? And what did Joe conclude after he received a call about a spirit communicating with a woman's daughter? Those questions and more in the second half of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You do so by going to thegravetalks.com and clicking Become a Gravekeeper. It'll take you to Patreon and you can sign up right there. It's only $5 a month and you'll get access to all of our conversations in their entirety, hundreds of episodes to binge away on, and it's only $5 a month. That is what we do to keep this show alive. Without it, it simply would not exist. So if you like the program, please consider helping us keep this thing afloat. You also get access to, like I said, every single interview we've ever done, including advanced episodes of the program, available to you weeks before they're released to the public. Patreon.com/TheGraveTalks to sign up. Get 1 month free when you sign up for an annual membership there as well. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.